ride. Welcome into Surviving Paradise, the podcast that takes a sometimes serious, oftentimes humorous look at the claim by Jehovah's Witnesses that they are living in a modern-day spiritual paradise. I am your host, Stacy Bauman, former elder, ministerial servant, most importantly, a kid raised as one of Jehovah's Witnesses throughout the 1970s and 80s. Warning, try to have some fun here, but there's lots of healing, laughter, tears, controversy, sarcasm, humor, and experiences. Please know that it is never meant to offend. We appreciate you being here. Please stay. I have to tell you, this week I'm going to jump off the pier early. Who wants to join me? I'm jumping into the deep end of the pool. When I was a kid in the 1970s and 1980s, one of the biggest cultural phenomenas going was this little movie called The Rocky Horror Picture Show. I can't be alone. Who remembers how big that was? If you grew up during that time period, you likely remember how crazy that movie was. I don't know if everyone has attended or experienced that. It's worth it just once. Did your mind, though, when I mentioned the title, immediately remember the big red lips with the male voice? It was all things androgyny, and it was led by an actor named Tim Burton as Dr. Frankenfurter, who was a transvestite scientist making trans cool way before it was cool. The Rocky Horror Picture Show became famous in my time, and kids were flocking to it in high school. They had all of these midnight showings. You remember you got to go at night, so you thought you were really rebellious, where people could see the movie for free if they showed up in costume like the characters, and believe me, it was campy. People shouted at the screen. They threw hot dogs at each other. They tossed toilet paper. I was in shock. They recited the lines for the movie. People had it memorized. They sang, they danced, and all of this was going on in the theater. If you experienced this at least once, you remember how nuts it was. And I got to tell you, there are still theaters in the United States showing Rocky Horror Picture Show where people still show up and party all night long to the movie. Listen, look, I was a jock in high school, and I remember the girls showing up to school dressed up like characters from the movie. And well, let me just say it got my attention. It was very hypersexualized. It was campy. It was fun. But after a few questions, it wasn't long before they were trying to teach me how to sing Time Warp. You remember the song. Even if you didn't go, you probably heard the song. Did anyone ever go to one of these midnight screenings or parties? I can't wait to hear if somebody knows what I'm talking about. Here's your chance, by the way, in a safe environment to come clean. No one is judging here. No one. The Rocky Horror Picture Show thing was a big, big deal in the early 1980s, at least for us as teenagers. And as far as I can remember, it's my earliest memory of what I would consider a cult following. A cult following. It had a very vehement emotional cult following. A following that continues in select theaters to this very day in 2024. Absolutely wild. I'm not going to invite anyone here to get their fishnet stockings on and put on some red lipstick, unless, of course, you want to. That's totally up to you. But I'm going to invite you to join me in considering something that is far more controversial than the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And let's be honest, who doesn't love a good controversy? We all like controversy. We like friction. So here we go. We're jumping off the pier. Let's discuss the word cult. Cult following. Cult followers. Cult. How do you feel? And when I ask that, I'm being sincere. How do you really feel when I say the word cult? If you're looking at the word itself and you want to dig around a little history, in brevity, the word cult descends from the Latin cultus, which is an ancient word encompassing the concepts of adoration, education, and cultivation. Sounds pretty good so far, right? At first, it became a catch-all term for groups devoted to a specific subject. This could be something philosophical. It could have been religious. It could even be something more mundane and borderline silly, like the Rocky Horror Picture Show. But by the 19th century, the word cult evolved to mean an unorthodox group of zealous and eccentric, loyal, diehard believers, often with bizarre or isolating practices or teachings. The word cult tends to make most people highly uncomfortable, and that's why I ask, how does it make you feel when I say the word? I get it. It's interesting to look at how cults developed throughout the years. Would it surprise you to know that cults weren't seen as bad things in the not-so-distant past? I was actually very surprised by that. According to the Encyclopedia Britannica, the term cult was seen as an ambivalent thing at best, with many of the cultures of the ancient world actually having mysterious cults that mostly the high society or elite people of that society belonged to. But let's be honest here, in 2024, times change, and so has all things cult. Scholars continue to say that there is no general consensus about what differentiates a cult from any other religious group. And I have to admit here and come clean, it's a feeling I myself have believed for many, many years. To me, religion in a whole is very cult-like. Some scholars have argued that by the simplest definition, many, if not all, religious sects originated as cults. Over time, some cults have become culturally accepted and the tension between them and society resolved, leading to the cult being recognized as a sect or even a church, might I say, a religion. And recent examples of this transition from so-called cult to religious group, and we're talking over the last couple centuries, could be seen in groups like the Seventh-day Adventists, or how about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? They started out as cults and morphed into full-blown religions. But the whole idea of cult and how people perceive them changed dramatically, at least from my observation during the 1970s in particular, at a time when I was a little guy, smack dab in the middle of my formative years, I might add. You remember, it was about this time among Jehovah's Witnesses that the truth that leads to eternal life, otherwise known as the Blue Bomber, a blue 192-page book published by Jehovah's Witnesses that they were pushing at neighborhood doors and led to tens of thousands of people joining Jehovah's Witnesses, including my own mother. It's funny because that book has such a history. Much of the term the truth can almost directly be traced back to the campaigns in the late 60s and early 70s that featured the truth book. And boy, I'll tell you, that book and that concept trapped my family. People began to associate the term cult with very negative splinter groups during that time period that were everything from silly, some of them so silly, to downright deadly. And I got to tell you, I think I have a unique perspective on the subject of cults, because for some very, very strange reason, that I never appreciated until I was older, I happen to have been raised in an area that featured a lot of cults. And that was the Bay Area in California in the United States. They were literally all around me. For those that may have lived there as well, do you remember some of these cults? Do you remember Synanon? I don't even know if I'm saying that right. It's such a weird word. You remember that group started out as a group that was helping people with drug counseling and drug addiction, and it morphed into a full-blown cult. That group, which was at one point located in Marin County where I grew up, they took that Satan and the snake thing a little too far by trying to kill an attorney who was getting people out of their little cult by hiding a rattlesnake minus its rattle in his mailbox, trying to kill him. Who can forget Synanon? And then there's, of course, Charles Manson. Chuck got his start in San Francisco. He eventually landed in San Quentin. There were other weird ones, including the Purple People. For those in the East Bay, if you remember that, they were an infamous sex cult. And then there was, later on in the 80s, Winford Wright's The Family, another sex cult. There's the Berkeley Psychic Institute, and even the famous Jim Jones and the People's Temple all got their start in the Bay Area. And there are even a few more. And I was there as a little guy the whole time. Might I add, I was one of Jehovah's Witnesses. We'll get there. But lots of weird sex rituals, murder, kids being born, and more. Welcome to the 1970s through the 1980s and the decade of Bay Area California cults. At this point, the cult was and the entire inference of a cult was seen as a very, very bad thing when I was a little guy. And oddly, by no small coincidence, and the reason I think I could say I know a lot about cults in some weird way, I then moved to Portland, Oregon with my mother and watched the entire Rajneesh movement. Only I had already seen cults by that time, more than I came to realize, and seeing a bunch of people dressed in red togas all over town seemed like child's play to me at that point, until, of course, they started planting salmonella in food at restaurants and poisoned over 700 people, the Rajneeshis. And yes, cults. I gotta tell you, it's never boring. Cults are never boring, are they? But it was in hindsight and as I grew older that I realized, my God, I've had a lot of exposure to cults. And I have to say, much like the Rocky Horror Picture Show, cults always understood the power of a name. Have you ever noticed that? How about Heaven's Gate? Inspired by the Book of Revelation, Bonnie Nettles and Marshall Applewhite, who looks a lot like Stephen Lett, formed Heaven's Gate as a doomsday cult with a focus on UFOs. In 1997, all the members died by mass suicide in an effort to ride a comet passing by the Earth. True story, and an interesting documentary. I already mentioned the People's Temple. Jim Jones, a charismatic preacher from the U.S., he formed the People's Temple to spread his own version of Christianity before moving them all to Guyana, to Jonestown. Then, in a mass suicide ritual in 1978, completely obliterated his little cult, killing even innocent children and, I don't know, giving a big lift to the brand of Kool-Aid, birthing the phrase, drink the Kool-Aid, that's often attached to cults. Then, of course, there's the Unification Church, a new religious movement that began in South Korea and spread rapidly across the planet. And all the adherents following the teachings of Sun Myung Moon, and therefore birthing the name the Moonies. Cults always have great names, I got to tell you, and so many more could be included in that. This is more than interesting history. This leads us to a question many have asked, including myself, and I still get asked this. Are Jehovah's Witnesses a cult? Who just cringed? It's an uncomfortable question because many of us used to be members or may even be listening in and are a current baptized member of Jehovah's Witnesses. And who do you know that wants to admit they were ever part of a cult? I've yet to meet a single person who is super excited to admit they were ever associated with a cult. And Netflix has an entire category on their streaming channel filled with cult documentaries that feature survivors bravely sharing their experiences. I'm fascinated, as you might imagine, but they don't exactly seem proud of it. The interviews don't feature a lot of pride. Cults are serious business. And in many cases, let's just cut to the chase. Cults get people killed. Consider for the next few minutes, kind of like finger food on this subject, because we could truly unpack it all all things Colts over many, many hours, and we don't have the time for that. But how about a few things just to get us thinking? But before we start, what is your opinion on Jehovah's Witnesses? I've been asked that question many times. Are they a cult? And if you've listened to prior episodes, you likely already know my opinion. But that is just my opinion. What do the facts show? And I want to highlight that because cults are great on imprinting you with their opinion, and we all have free will. What is your opinion? What do secular authorities say about how to ID or identify a cult? And in my favorite question of all, we're going to compare the two. What do Jehovah's Witnesses themselves say identifies a cult? Remember, they claim to speak for Jesus. He handpicked them, their words, not mine. So surely Jesus and his organization would want us all to be well aware of what a cult looks like, right? He would want to be sure we weren't ignorant of Satan's designs, right? You'll be happy to know that the nine guys tasked with saving everyone's life on the planet have a lot to say about what makes a cult. And here you thought you were only interested in commenting on a man's vasectomy, or a woman getting breast implants, or a child being student body president. No! Thankfully, the faithful and discreet slave have also had a lot to say about cults. And I'd like to encourage you to brace yourself for the next few minutes. And yes, this may even trigger some of us. The word from Jesus' chosen men in upstate New York should be the only authority on identifying what a cult is. I want to emphasize that. They speak for God, or so they tell us. So anything they have to say on what identifies a cult should be highly respected and obeyed. Do you agree? They oftentimes remind us that our obedience to them means life and death. So surely anything they want to say about a cult should get our attention. They speak for Jehovah. Remember that. I'm going to repeat it. And it's not just my OCD kicking in. It's repetition for emphasis. We've covered that. But first, in comparing the two side by side, what do the secular worldly authorities, we are told, are all controlled by Satan himself, what do they have to say about cults? In an article you can currently find on masterclass.com, a think tank featuring some of the planet's top thinkers, we find an article that echoes any and all other sources on what makes a cult in 2024. Warning, this may make you a little uncomfortable as your mind breaks free from years of manipulation. There at masterclass.com, in their definition, we are warned to look out for the following indicators you're about to dedicate your life to a cult. Under the subheading Characteristics of a Cult, we are told this: each cult has its own distinctive focus, but almost all of these groups share at least some elements in common, such as four bullet points, my friends. Number one, authoritarian control. Cultism hinges on encouraging maximum dependency. People in the cult must feel incapable of living an individual life outside the norms of the group. After all, to where would we go? I added that. These beliefs often go hand in hand with a worshipful attitude towards the group's authoritarian leader. Number two, extremist beliefs. Cult members hold to very dogmatic and extreme beliefs. They also are unable to question these belief systems without fear of reprisal or punishment from the leader or other group members. Number three, isolation from society. As soon as new members join a cult, other adherents work hard to isolate them from family members and friends. This helps fulfill the mind control aspirations of the leader. It also creates a hive mind of sorts between the new person and the other members. Uncomfortable yet? One more. Veneration of a single individual. Charismatic leaders are often at the center of most cults. Consider the Manson family of the late 1960s. As their name suggests, they adopted the beliefs of their leader, Charles Manson, and fulfilled his requests. The same pattern repeats in almost all other cults, albeit to less violent ends in many cases. End quote on how to identify a cult from secular sources. The writer, though, goes on and continues by identifying four primary types of cults. It just adds to the conversation. Would you like to know what those four kinds of cults are? Number one, doomsday cults, where people come together to prep for the end of the world happening any second now, and with apparent skills in overlapping generations. Think Branch Davidians as an example. Number two, political cults. Who remembers Patty Hearst? Where are my 70s people out there? Remember her whole, man, what a dramatic story she had. Number three, religious cults. Some cults are offshoots of mainline religions, while others offer brand new dogmas and theology. When others are selling life in heaven, how about pitching a paradise earth? Sound familiar? And finally, everyone's favorite when it comes to cults, sex cults. Because, well, let's be honest, everyone loves an all-you-can-eat buffet, and sex is popular. Looking at those four, do you know anyone that qualifies for at least two of them by definition? Do you know of anyone? I digress. But I've been saying it all along. When you say the word cult, most people squirm. Or maybe that's just me. Fair enough. It's still just one of those words, ugh. It still just finds its way into my psyche. Aside from some people's desire to have sex with a lot of people in a sex cult, why would anyone ever knowingly join a cult? It's the $10 million question. It's one people ask all the time. What can't they see? How are they being fooled? How are they being duped like that? It's interesting. Doctors, anthropologists, psychologists, a long list of professionals have studied that very question and dynamic only to arrive at an obvious number of conclusions. People join cult movements for various reasons, most of which revolve around a desire for meaning and community. It's a human thing, and it works. Many who became part of such organizations have troubled backgrounds and difficulty fitting into regular society. Sound familiar? They might also feel mainstream culture has no place for them. They feel like an outcast and nothing of spiritual value to offer either. Former cult members often describe the long-lasting sense of loneliness, and I've heard it a million times, nihilism, that they felt prior to becoming part of something bigger than themselves. Finding a purpose can cause people to be drawn to cult. This encourages them to drop their defenses. They'll even go so far as to abandon their own family and accept bizarre elements, just strange, off the planet, bizarre things in these new communities that they might join. Anyone uncomfortable? In other words, cults are successful because they prey upon our base desires to be loved, to find purpose, to answer questions that we can't find answers to, such as, I don't know, what happens at death? Or, is this life all there is? See what I did there? They tap into our desire for a family or even wanting better treatment of animals. Not kidding. You might know of one. And for those teetering on being a sociopath in this world, they feed on a person's desire for power control, dominance. None of this is new. There isn't anything new here, folks. It's been going on for centuries. Dare I say you could even go back quite a few centuries. Take a look at that group, the Pharisees or the Sadducees in the Bible. Only look in the New World Translation, of course. We are all vulnerable to these desires. All of us. None of us are free from why and how this works. I'm not breaking new ground here on why cults work. Now, I've spent a few minutes in giving you the secular world's view in just a few snapshots. Again, this could be an episode that goes on for many, many hours. We won't do that to you. But I've given you what the secular world defines as a cult. But what about Jehovah's Witnesses? You know them, those smiling people I see in their magazine photographs or nose down in their phone, sipping a coffee next to a book cart at your local park. Those people who always leave a football stadium cleaner than they found it after a three-day convention. What about those people? The people who claim to love their neighbor more than anything else but Jehovah. Surely, Jehovah's Witnesses and the world that many of us grew up in couldn't be a cult, right? We weren't fooled and duped by a cult when we considered Jehovah's Witnesses, were we? I mean, come on. It was a little stifling. We had to go on service. We had to wear ties. Our grooming and our dress was always under observation. We couldn't hang out with certain people. I mean, come on. We had friends at the Kingdom Hall. It wasn't a cult, was it? Well, why don't we let them answer that very important question for themselves? And as I often do here, for anyone who's uncomfortable and listening in that might be a witness, I don't promote on this show or anywhere else you going to websites or picking up books or finding that mentally diseased friend that's an apostate. I encourage you to look directly and squarely at your own organization's literature and to the leadership that writes it, the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses. I want them, the speakers for Jehovah and Jesus themselves, to tell us if they are a cult or not. As I already said, I don't need to reestablish their credentials as the wisest, most loving organization on earth. They tell us frequently. We have been assured that Jesus chose them personally. The same guy that walked on water, the same guy that turned water into wine, the same guy that resurrected people. Enough said. So let's now dive into the faithful and discreet slaves' definitions and warnings on all things cult and whether they themselves are a cult. Join me as we dive into the Watchtower of February 15th, 1994, starting on page 3 in a series of articles that starts with cults. What are they? Very, very appropriate title. We've got some questions. Now, the article begins with the writer, and I might add this is available on the website. The article begins with the writer under the influence of Holy Spirit, or so we're told, relating the scene from Waco, Texas, when the federal officers raided the compound of the Branch Davidians, who incidentally were endangering children and hiding repulsive sex abuse. Is your brain firing? Okay, I'll stay on course here. But once firing us all up about how awful the Branch Davidian cult was, they describe what happened that fateful day. Quoting the Watchtower, February 15th, 1994, quote, "This confrontation left 10 dead and several wounded. During the following 50 days, hundreds of government agents laid siege to the compound with enough guns to wage a small war. The standoff ended in a showdown that left 86 dead, including at least 17 children." But who was the enemy? An army of drug-dealing mobsters? A guerrilla faction? No. As you may know, the enemy was a group of religious devotees, members of a cult. Their tragedy made an inconspicuous community on the plains of Central Texas, USA, the focus of international attention. The news media flooded the airwaves and the printed page with a barrage of reports, analysis, and comments on the dangers of fanatical cults. End quote. If you're thinking, wow, that scene you just described there, Dear Governing Body, sounds a lot like the scene from the 2016 Remain Loyal to Jehovah District Convention videos where you showed us soldiers toting machine guns and breaking into secret Jehovah's Witness bunkers. Well, you're not alone. I thought it too. I thought the same thing. But don't let that distract you. The message is clear. Cults are bad, and they're fanatical according to the governing body. But the article continues, quote, "The public was reminded of previous instances in which cult members were led to death by their leaders. The 1969 Manson murders in California, the 1978 mass suicide of cult members in Jonestown, Guyana, the 1987 murder-suicide pact engineered by cult leader Park Soon-ja of Korea, which resulted in the death of 32 members." End quote. Then this article makes an important comment. Quote, "Significantly, most of these people claim to be Christians and professed belief in the Bible." End quote. So, with our brain synapses firing, by the governing body's own admission, many cults claim to be Christians and believe in the Bible. And I have to tell you, that is a very important point. Very important point, wouldn't you say? I'll bet they're not happy about cults ripping off the book Jehovah had written only for them in upstate New York. But it's funny. Many cults, people, organizations, institutions, well, they all need to establish that they are the authority. Would you agree? And what better way to do it than to leverage the most widely distributed holy book in all of human history and then claim that they alone understand it? Keep in mind, videos, cell phones, emails, well, they haven't always been around to use. But the Bible? Well, even the Holiday Inn has one. And the messages inside are respected by billions of people. Not a bad way to get someone's attention, would you agree? The article continues with a treasure chest of comments only an ex-Jehovah's Witness could appreciate. Returning to the article, quote, "Understandably, many who respect the Bible as the Word of God are appalled at the brazen misuse of the Scriptures by these cults. As a result, over the years, hundreds of organizations have been established for the purpose of monitoring cults and exposing their dangerous practices. Experts on cult behavior predict the coming of a new millennium in a few years may trigger the proliferation of cults." Speaking of the year 2000, I might add, back to the article, quote, "One news magazine noted that according to anti-cult groups, there are thousands of cults out there poised to snatch your body, control your mind, corrupt your soul. Few are armed, but most are considered dangerous. They'll seduce you and fleece you, marry and bury you." End quote. Powerful stuff. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. Thank you for the spiritual food, dear governing body. I am indeed appalled by what the governing body says in this article is brazen misuse of the Scriptures by these cults. Appalling actually doesn't even cover it from where I sit. Let me just give you one example that pops into my mind that pisses me off daily if I even start to think about it. How about, as an example, this one as a brazen misuse of the scriptures, as they noted in the article identifies a cult. Acts 15, 28 and 29 of the New World Translation, which reads, quote, "For the Holy Spirit and we ourselves have favored adding no further burden to you except these necessary things: to keep abstaining from things sacrificed to idols, from blood, from what is strangled, and from sexual immorality," end quote. You'll note there, just if you're keeping track, that Acts 15, 28, and 29 does not prohibit blood transfusions. That's something that Jehovah's Witnesses lean into to actually let their children die. Not just their children, but anyone who might need a blood transfusion. This despite the fact that it is a brazen misuse of the scripture. The passage in Acts 15, 28, and 29 was a letter written to Gentile Christians in Antioch, Syria, and Cilicia, which instructed them to abstain from food that was strangled or sacrificed to idols, you know, false religion, or from drinking blood or eating meat with blood in it, and sexual immorality. By the way, those were all practices of pagans, people that weren't Christians. It doesn't mention a blood transfusion. Not a word. Do you mean like that, governing body? Would this qualify in your mind as brazen misuse of scripture, like those other cults are always doing? Got it. Thanks for the clarification. And while I laugh, there's not a thing about this that's even remotely funny. People are dead. I'm sure glad you, as the governing body, never brazenly misuse the scriptures. But if you're looking for what the governing body considers to be a cult, and whether Jehovah's Witnesses themselves are a cult, once again, let's let them answer that question for us. And here is the beginning of their answer. It's under the subheading, "What is a cult?" They say the following, quote, "The term cult is used loosely by many who may not be fully aware of its connotations. To prevent confusion, some theologians actually avoid using the term. The World Book Encyclopedia explains that traditionally, the term cult referred to any form of worship or ritual observance. By that criterion, all religious organizations could be classified as cults." However, in general usage today, the word cult has a different meaning. The same encyclopedia notes that since the mid-1900s, publicity about cults has altered the meaning of the term. Today, the term is applied to groups that follow a living leader who promotes new and unorthodox doctrines and practices, end quote. Anybody else want to take this one? Or, I don't know, nine such leaders who promote unorthodox doctrines and practices, you know, for example, families who stop speaking to each other forever. Or maybe the newest concept, overlapping generations, something no one's ever heard of. I could keep going on and on. Do they qualify? Do they qualify by your definition? But the article continues, quote, "Endorsing the popular usage of the term, Newsweek magazine explains that cults are normally small, fringe groups whose members derive their identity and purpose from a single charismatic individual. Similarly, Asia Week magazine notes that the term cult itself is vague, but it actually denotes a new religious creed, pay attention to this, built around a charismatic leader who often proclaims himself to be the personification of God," end quote. You don't say, governing body. So, again, As uncomfortable as it may be, how about some questions? If I was a Bible student in the late 1800s, and I was invited to a lecture, a public lecture by Charles Taze Russell, I shouldn't go, right? I shouldn't go. Because, well, the very founder of Jehovah's Witnesses, then known as the Bible Students, told us the following in Zion's Watchtower of 1906, July 15th, pages 230 and again on 234, where he tells us, quote, "The truths I present as God's mouthpiece," end quote. And didn't you just say in print in the article from 94 that this was a critical factor in identifying a cult? As for Jehovah's Witnesses being a small fringe group that you mentioned, there are 8 million who say they are Jehovah's Witnesses today, compared to 8 billion on the planet, that is, people. Wait, I guess that does make them small and fringe, doesn't it? But I've been hearing terms like the great crowd and myriads of brothers and this harvest work and the great multitude for years. So Jehovah's Witnesses can't be considered small, can they? I mean, 8 million people. Yeah, granted, there's 8 billion on the planet. 8 million. Is now a good time to remind anyone listening that all of this, everything I've shared, is in print and on the website, and it is the governing body's definition of a cult. Is now a good time? If Chuck didn't convince you he was, quote, a charismatic leader promoting unorthodox doctrines and the personification of Jehovah himself, well, hold tight. If that didn't do it for you, the guy that followed him wanted you to know that he was. In the golden age of 1935, October 23rd, page 50, Judge Joe Rutherford tells us, quote, "Judge Rutherford couldn't write these things unless he were used of God," end quote. And for any of us that have done any research or read up on the judge, what a character. The judge had a lot to say, especially about his personal conversations with angels. It's in print. Just don't ask him what that looked like. He goes on to say that he doesn't want to explain it. In fact, as I read about it and learned on my journey out, I couldn't help but think that he and Joseph Smith of Mormon faith, they would have been fast friends. They would have been great friends. And hey, I just thought of something else in this moment. Maybe their angels were friends too. Can you see it now? Gabriel, meet Moroni. Moroni, Gabriel. Two guys, charismatic leaders of small fringe groups, couldn't have been cults, right? But look, that's history. It's history. Some of us know it. Maybe these are new points to you. What about the leadership of Jehovah's Witnesses today in 2024? The ones who literally just told us in their printed article what to look for if we're trying to stay away from a cult. Surely they wouldn't be charismatic leaders putting themselves on par with God and teaching suspect doctrines, would they? Not the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses today. They don't qualify under that definition, do they? How about a sampling? From the Watchtower of 1993, August 15th, page 11, we're told this, quote, "Holy Spirit working through God's organization will also help us to gain a wonderfully clear understanding of what Jehovah has in store for those who love him." After explaining that prominent people of this system of things cannot understand God's purposes, Paul wrote, "It is to us God has revealed them through his Spirit," end quote. The governing body has proclaimed themselves to be that charismatic leader. From the Watchtower of 1992, November 15th, page 20, quote, "Spiritual food provided by God through the faithful slave," end quote. A leader in direct hip-to-hip contact with the Almighty himself. Got it. From Examining the Scriptures, Daily, 2007, on page 34, we are told, quote, Christ thus leads the congregation by means of the Spirit-anointed, faithful, and discreet slave and its governing body. End quote. I could keep going, but it gets boring. I could cite many, many more comments from the governing body. I'm going to stop. The very men who tell us what a cult is by claiming it starts with human personalities, claiming to be on par with God, are a collection of human personalities claiming to speak for God. Wait a minute. Wait right there. Does that mean... Yeah, no. Wait a minute. No. No. Couldn't be. I'm uncomfortable, but hold on tight. The governing body, by means of the Watchtower, again, of February 15th, 1994, page 3, the series Cults, What Are They? They aren't done explaining what a cult is. The article continues, quote, clearly, cults are generally understood to be religious groups with radical views and practices that clash with what is accepted today as normal social behavior. Usually they conduct their religious activities in secrecy. Many of these cultic groups actually isolate themselves in communes. Their devotion to a self-proclaimed human leader is likely to be unconditional and exclusive. Often these leaders boast of having been divinely chosen or even of being themselves divine in nature. End quote. Full warning, I'm about to laugh, and I know that many people that listen complain that I laugh, and they don't like it. But come on. Radical views that go beyond accepted social behavior? I don't know. Do you mean like shunning your own family, your own flesh and blood? Does that qualify? They usually, cults that is, conduct their religious activities in secrecy? No. You don't mean like elders' meetings behind closed doors that only men could be a part of, do you? Or judicial meetings in buildings with no windows, with a secret book that not even women are allowed to see? They keep file cabinets locked down in the Kingdom Hall on files on people? They have a secret pedophile database that they won't give the authorities? Do you mean those kinds of secrets? Not those kinds of secrets. I mean, anyone who did those types of things, well, you just told us they'd be considered a cult, right? Based on this article, your definition, the definition you're giving us, this would be considered a cult. Look, I'm just asking for a friend here. But Will, a final question. You mentioned, and I quote, their devotion to a self-proclaimed human leader and it's unconditional and exclusive, end quote. I want everyone to know at this point, I'm forcing myself to sit in this chair and take deep breaths, but I really need to know what a cult looks like. So a question or two for the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses, who are no doubt listening in by means of angels who will let them know what I'm saying on this terrible mentally diseased podcast, but does the following qualify as unconditional and exclusive when defining a cult? Does this sort of exclusivity, is this sort of exclusivity reserved for what you call a cult? From the Watchtower of 1983, February 15th, page 12, I am told, quote, similarly, Jehovah is using only one organization today to accomplish his will. To receive everlasting life in the earthly paradise, we must identify that organization and serve God as part of it. End quote. Wait a minute. Watchtower of 1989, September 1st, page 19 tells me, quote, only Jehovah's Witnesses, those of the anointed remnant and the great crowd as a united organization under the protection of the supreme organizer, have any scriptural hope of surviving the impending end of this doomed system dominated by Satan the devil, end quote. Listen, I'm always up for being corrected, but I don't know, that sounds very exclusive to me. But you said cult leaders require unconditional devotion as well. Wait a minute. I recently heard something, and what was it again? I think I refer to it as my favorite quote of all time from the Watchtower of 2013, November 15th, page 20, quote, "At that time, the life-saving direction that we receive from Jehovah's organization, pretty exclusive, may not appear practical from a human standpoint. All of us must be ready to obey any instructions we may receive, whether these appear sound from a strategic or human standpoint or not." End quote. There it is. Exclusive and unconditional. Obey. The governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses requires unconditional obedience to their instructions. Wow. Oh no, wait a minute. Wow, when I wanted to compare what worldly secular authorities say defines a cult with what the governing body, Jesus' chosen guys, say defines a cult, I didn't expect to find this. This is really uncomfortable. Is anyone else uncomfortable? It's almost as uncomfortable as those fishnet stockings many slipped into for the Rocky Horror Picture Show at midnight. But friends, we aren't done yet. This next nugget of Holy Spirit may just cause you to throw something, bang your head against a wall, or just be triggered. You've been warned. From the Watchtower of February 15th, 1994, page 3, that article, Cults, What Are They?, it continues with this, quote, "Occasionally, anti-cult organizations and the media have referred to Jehovah's Witnesses as a cult. A number of recent newspaper articles lump the Witnesses with religious groups known for their questionable practices." Podcast host taking a deep breath, join me. Back to the article, quote, "But would it be accurate to refer to Jehovah's Witnesses as a small fringe religious group? Cult members often isolate themselves from friends, family, and even society in general. Is that the case with Jehovah's Witnesses? Are the Witnesses using deceptive and unethical techniques to recruit members? Cult leaders are known to use manipulative methods to control the minds of their followers. Is there any evidence that Jehovah's Witnesses do this? Is their worship cloaked in secrecy? Are they following and venerating a human leader? Pointedly, are Jehovah's Witnesses a cult?" End quote. Wow. Wow. This is a fantastic collection of really good questions found in the literature of Jehovah's Witnesses with oversight from the governing body. And as we're told, that comes to us from Jesus himself. He certainly eagerly awaits our answer to this question, are Jehovah's Witnesses a cult? I mean, listen. Whether you're associated now or you were in the past, let's just follow their framework. Do Jehovah's Witnesses isolate themselves from friends, family, or society? They recently just lost millions in Norway due to their shunning their policies. They will cut off family in a split second. Forever. They aren't allowed to go to their family's birthdays or holiday gatherings or even wish their mother a happy Mother's Day. Their friends can only be other Jehovah's Witnesses. Is that isolating? They view anyone not baptized as a Jehovah's Witness as a, quote, worldly person, fit for death and Armageddon. That's why they preach. They're trying to save them. They're forbidden from giving to charity, feeding the homeless, donating life-saving blood or its fractions, running for office, or even student council president in junior high, or going to college. Do any of those decisions count as isolation from society? Do their leaders use manipulative methods to control the minds of their followers? See last week's episode if interested. But again, they told grown-ass men they weren't allowed to grow hair on certain parts of their bodies for almost a century, and everyone obeyed. Is their worship cloaked in secrecy? I think I answered that earlier. But you sisters, if you're in doubt, feel free to go to the literature counter at your next congregation meeting at the Kingdom Hall and ask the ministerial servant there for a copy of the Shepherd the Flock of God book. Report back. Let us know how it goes. But in the follow-up article to this series on what it means to be a cult, The Watchtower of February 15th, 1994, pages 5 through 7, under the aptly titled second installment, Are Jehovah's Witnesses a Cult?, we're given the answer. Quote, who is their leader, is the subheading. The answer, quote, it is precisely because of this close adherence to Bible teachings that the veneration and idolization of human leaders, so characteristic of cults today, is not to be found among Jehovah's Witnesses. They reject the concept of a clergy-laity distinction. The Encyclopedia of Religion aptly states about Jehovah's Witnesses, a clergy class and distinctive titles are prohibited. End quote. If you're ever looking for gaslighting, yeah. Veneration of leaders? No. Not Jehovah's Witnesses. In fact, if you happen to have caught the May 2022 JW broadcast, still available on their website as Spiritual Food, check out right around the 48-minute mark, where publishers can see prominently displayed in the background painted portraits of governing body members throughout the years, much like you would see in a museum. Or how about look up their life experiences in the Watchtower? Or how about check out their Who is the Governing Body section currently found on the website? Or, they don't venerate their leaders. Leader, but they also don't have titles or idolize these guys, right? They're so unimportant that you can actually openly disagree with them, right? Yeah, don't do that. But from Examining the Scriptures Daily, 2007, page 34 again, quote, Christ leads the congregation by means of the Spirit-anointed, faithful, and discreet slave and its governing body. Small sentence, 10, 12 words, two titles. Two! Faithful and discreet slave, nothing like ripping off a parable, and, you know, brazen misuse of the Scriptures, be damned. Their definition, not mine. Or the governing body. Small sentence, two titles. From the Watchtower of 2022, February, page 4, quote, the plain truth is that we cannot say that we trust in Jehovah if we do not trust in his earthly representatives, those whom Jehovah trusts. Today, Jehovah leads the earthly part of his organization by means of the faithful and discreet slave. End quote. Gotta tell ya, it's a fascinating set of definitions when you're looking at cults. I mean, Jehovah obviously trusted Anthony Morris. He propped him up on stage and had him tear into people for many years. Then in the blink of an eye, he didn't trust him anymore, but he was certainly venerated while he was there. And I want to know, I guess I wanted everyone to know that I've fought the urge throughout this entire episode to play Cult of Personality by Living Color in the background throughout my entire diatribe. If I just planted that in your head for the rest of the day, you're welcome. But no conversation that asks, are Jehovah's Witnesses a cult, is complete without an experience, right? The governing body loves those uncorroborated, nameless experiences that we can't ever find out if they're real or not. From the Watchtower of 1994, February 15th, that same article, Are Jehovah's Witnesses a Cult? Quote, the director of news and special projects for a television station in the United States wrote to Jehovah's Witnesses in response to a biased report about the witnesses on the TV news show 60 Minutes. He said, if more people live the way your faith does, this nation wouldn't be in the shape it is in. I am one newsman who knows that your organization is founded on love and a strong faith in the Creator. End quote. As I already said, can't be corroborated. No idea who this newsman is, but we are to take it at face value. And I have to correct him. Actually, Jehovah's Witnesses was founded by a guy that originally liked to measure the Great Pyramids of Egypt, where he concluded that Armageddon, the end of all known human life, was coming in 1878. But then he realized, nah, it's 1881. But then he said, no, it's 1914. And then it was followed by 1918. And it was followed by a guy that said he talks to angels while vacationing in his San Diego mansion, who claimed that the world would end in 1925, who was followed by a guy who then claimed it would end in 1975. I could keep going, but listen, news guy. You, as a crack journalist not named in this quote in 94, because it was probably never said, you may want to brush up on your research skills. You are a journalist, after all. Jehovah's Witnesses weren't founded on love and strong faith in the Creator. They were founded by these guys. I started out this episode by asking if you wanted to join me in a world of controversy, and I jumped off the pier. The question is a simple but profound one. Are Jehovah's Witnesses a cult? That question has always stirred a lot of controversy, even among ex-witnesses. No one likes to think that they were fooled or duped. No one likes to think they've wasted their life or that they gave up on their dreams. And in a fact that angers me every so often, time itself isn't something that you can get back. I mentioned the cult classic with a cult following, that crazy, ridiculous movie, The Rocky Horror Picture Show. And you probably thought, huh? It's a weird marriage to this subject. I agree, it is weird. It's not a reach, but it's weird. But like a high-control group, it has the same power over people. And whether you have participated in throwing hot dogs or dressing up in costumes or not, at a midnight showing, there is a line in the movie that applies to this question. Are Jehovah's Witnesses a cult? And I'm going to steal it here and throw it out to any Jehovah's Witness that is bravely listening, who has listened to me for the last hour or better read to them from their own literature on what they say defines a cult. And I want to say, don't worry, I'm not going to sing it. And I'm dressed completely normally with no makeup on. But I'm going to steal the line from one of the groupies in the movie, a character known as Columbia, who said in song, quote, I said, hey, listen to me. Stay sane inside insanity. But he locked the door and threw away the key. End quote. For those that have bravely stayed to the end of this episode, I leave you with the question. Are Jehovah's Witnesses a cult by their own definition? The beauty of free will is that you get to answer that your way. Think about it. I want to thank you for spending time with me this week and jumping off that pier, wherever you may be. Be well.